Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Work Hour podcast. Today is episode 68, not 78 as I falsely reported earlier. I got a little bit ahead of ourselves with that, a little bit too eager and ambitious. But today's topic is how do you future-proof your creative work? When we say your creative work, it could be your own personal creativity and how you do future-proof, staying creative. Or if you are a small company or business, then to you that might look like how do you future-proof your business, whatever your creativity looks like to you. Alessandra, interesting topic.
This comes up because when I am in a point of struggling to get out my creative work, be it because something has happened that's disruptive, or maybe I'm dealing with just having really low energy, or it's fatigue, or it could be like in case of creative work hour, we don't have enough hands on deck to run what we're doing for creative work hour. And I'm not much of a manager person. Like I don't have managing skills. Like I'm a good robot. I can take orders, but I have a hard time managing a group of people. Like I always avoided being the boss. So here we are in Creative Work Hour. We've done this for like th more than 3,000 sessions now. And the first couple of thousand, I was okay. This last thousand, I'm not so okay because I'm trying to do other my own creative work, and I haven't future-proofed creative work hour. That is this group that comes together every day so that we support each other in creative work, getting things out there. And a big part of the energy of this is that when one of us gets something out there, we all celebrate, right? And that's the feedback loop of how we keep it going. But I see that I don't have a flywheel as the founder. I don't have a flywheel for creative work hour. So I was sharing with you, Greg, and with Shadows earlier that I get quite concerned about how will we future-proof creative work hour. This is not a post. This is running a community. That's my number one creative work. How do we future-proof it when just one person cannot do this?
Right, it's a challenge, isn't it? It's
It's a real challenge. And one of the things that's been suggested to me is, do you have where everybody sits down and the only thing that we're doing in that session is discussing together how do we future-proof creative work hour? So when we choose topics for our podcast, it's because we're really working in real time of how to fix stuff or getting an awareness of how do things affect our creative work. Yeah, so that's what I'm tackling up with right now. So I thought, why not have this as the topic of discussion today?
Thank you, Alessandra. I struggle with the same thing as we talked about earlier with myself. I have support groups that I run for mental health, for brain injury and chronic pain. Then there's my kindness community, which I'm building on Go Brunch and asynchronously. And I'm not, because I'm fatigued a lot, which I'm trying to get to the bottom of, but I'm not spending the time nurturing those communities, growing them, promoting them, forming, strategic partnerships and alliances and things of that nature. Which, that's kind of my creative endeavor at this time is that community, like yourself. And so for me, that would be what that looks like. But future proofing could look like any number of things. If you're, a solopreneur, freelancer, that's going to look different than if you're a small business or organization. And then there's your personal creativity, and then there's the, creativity and continuation of the business as well. And that might mean, making simple things such as, making sure that there's key players in responsible positions that have the keys to the store, as it were, and things of that nature. But it's not to oversimplify anything. But Bobby, what about yourself when it comes to your creativity or how you envision future-proofing your creativity or what that looks like for you, or even what that might look like for creative work hour. What are your thoughts or what comes to mind on that topic, Bobby Wasserman?
For me, I know that what's been helping me lately, because everything is changing so fast, is actually using new tools that are coming up. right? And so you take what you know and you incorporate these new tools and it brings you to a whole new level. So that's especially with AI.
You're talking
Are
about the
you?
pre-verbal prompting is something that you were talking about.
Yes. Oh my
Gets
gosh.
you excited,
That's,
right? Do you
I was
want
so excited about
to? Yeah.
that. It gave me what I needed. I knew in my head what I wanted to do, translating it into language that was going to incorporate new tools and new thinking and the new vision of business was where I was having problems stumbling. So that AI bridge that takes you from what's in your head and what you know in the language that you know, right? And in your experience that you know, that new technical bridge can take your same ideas, add the nuances of today, and get you where you want to be. So that's, it's especially now, it's just business is changing so fast.
Bobby, could you give an example of what, if you're able to, what might a pre-verbal prompt look like, or what does that actually mean?
So, from my understanding, which, up to interpretation, my understanding with these pre-verbal prompts is being pre-verbal, having the idea that hasn't quite crystallized, right? So it's just kind of bubbling under the surface and using different AI prompts, you can identify that where, what are you, if you're talking about something that is, in the lexicon and people are implementing, the pre-verbal is something that you've got this idea, it's relative, it's new. That's a dangerous word, new. But it's new, and then what it still needs to be crystallized and formed into something coherent that can be talked about, right? So yeah, so these pre-verbal prompts have been really helpful for me.
Right, because language and learning and pre-verbal, I think about, child development and language models are language model, right? Before something's verbalized, if you can get in right before it's verbalized and manipulate in that in some way, I can see how that would be incredibly beneficial and creative. But Bobby B, how about yourself? How do you future-proof your creative work? What does that look like for you, and what that might that look like for creative work, however?
It's a real interesting question, and I'm not sure I have a good answer, because all creativity comes from influences from everywhere. When I think of future proofing, I go to protecting the content that I have uniquely constructed and that someone else will take bits and bobs from and construct for their future. So, yeah, I just really can't say I'm very good at it.
So when you're saying
I
content,
mentioned.
you could be referring to intellectual property as content, right?
And that's how I'm taking the question. Yeah.
So when you were in your management field and your creative side of being in management or the creative side of that business or enterprise, how did
Yeah.
future proofing, what did that look like in that wrapper, in that scenario?
Well, now that's a great question. I retired from that industry 12 years ago, before AI, before a number of other things. And it was very critical. The core value, the perceived value of what we did was heavily influenced by protecting what we had come up with. So, but again, the rules have changed, the games have changed, and I think there's a high level of vulnerability to trying to do that well these days. So right now I'm just trying to learn about what's possible and not. So it's a growth path for me.
So if you were to go back to your current position, let's say that you were still doing that, knowing what you know now that 12 years have passed, is there something that you think that maybe has been missed or, something, based upon what you know now, hindsight is everything, right? Is there anything you could take away from that?
So we definitely exercised due diligence and the high tech innovation that we were doing. It was first to market, but it was also first to protection. There were definitely cases where we had something that someone else had caught wind of or seen and found the missing link of maturation before we did. And that's just the game. That's how it plays out. But again, with that information being so readily available now, it's definitely a different playing field. And I can't say that I really know how to run with it well. I have two things with the trademark office that I'm, pushing through. And I did all my due diligence searches to make sure no one else had these things. I think there's, as you're putting out, Greg, or asking, there's definitely a need to protect, but you have to, you have to have enough maturation in your concept, otherwise it'll get kicked back. One other example, we tried to develop a cartoon character about 10 years ago and, figured, okay, this is such a weird name. No one's ever thought of this one. We were completely wrong. A major company that has animated characters had patented close to 10,000 potential names.
Right. And AI, nipping at everyone's heels, everyone has to be concerned about how that takes place. Shadows, how about you? When you think about future-proofing your creativity, your creative work, what comes to mind for you?
Very little, actually. I guess if I look at it from the standpoint of if I should get sick or have an accident or whatever, and it's a temporary absence, do I keep things afloat enough to return or don't I? If I've got products out there, do they need to be maintained or are they just going to be able to operate on their own? So those all become questions you have to kind of deal with as you go. And then, we get down, if I'm at an age where I have to think about the possibility that, yeah, I might not be around at all. And do I really want to position the what I'm doing so that it continues on with somebody else looking after it, like my niece. So yeah, that's all stuff to consider.
Right, because if you were planning on handing it down, then there'd be a continuity step for that, some training and
Yeah, she'd have to have access to it. First of all, she'd probably have to be interested in it.
that usually helps, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Jennifer?
This question is one that actually kind of has been oddly floating around in my own head. So, good topic. So, I approach it three different ways. Personal, I continue to follow my own curiosity that has served me well my entire life. And so, that's how I keep my creative juices flowing. As far as the business goes, my sons are now part of my business. And so, it's not my business, really, it's our business. And they are in every aspect of it. So, they should be able to continue it if they should so choose. And then as far as community goes, Alessandra, I'm in the same boat as you are in reference to trying to figure out how to make ensure that the, in my case, NAPODPOMO, that that community continues on beyond me, because I sure hope it would. And then the last piece is legacy. And I have an example of where this is one of the reasons why it's at the forefront. Todd Cochran, the founder of Blueberry, passed away recently. And that was a shock and a jolt for all of us because he was just going about his day. And all of a sudden he wasn't going about his day. And his sons, two sons, he has like four or five kids, and two of his sons have stepped in to take over his solo podcast. And I can't tell you how like beautiful and wonderful and lovely it is to be able to listen to his show, even without him, that his two sons are they're alternating each week being the host of the show. I can hear his voice in them. I hear the mannerisms of him in them. And I don't know, I'm such a, right now my eyes are getting all teary because I think it's a lovely thing if somebody will step into it and that he, in essence, his legacy continues on past him. As much as we all miss him, he is not gone. He is not forgotten. The other piece of that is that he had 1800 and something shows that he had done, been doing week after week after week. His sons want to get him to at least 2000. And if they like it, they'll continue, which I hope they do, because that would be the best thing ever. So I think there's those aspects of that of where we all would like, as Shadow said, if her niece is interested, we would all like for our body of work to continue. The reality is it may not. So what have we created that can have long-term visibility? And I think of the beautiful thing about Hive is that it's blockchain and is it dependent on anything else except itself? So I think that's some of the legacy that we can leave behind. Even if no one else within our world wants to continue what we're doing, it still exists to be discovered over and over and over again, because in that way, it's evergreen. And because it's evergreen, it continues beyond us.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, what I get from that is ownership and investment, right? If you're invested in being part of the organization, you take ownership of certain things. Alessandra, good conversation.
Well, it is a really good conversation. And I think I just had an epiphany while Jennifer was talking about the three ways that she was looking at future-proofing one's creative work. Like, I think I have been in regards to as a founder of Creative Work Hour and all these sessions that we do, more than 100 a month. But what's more important than the number of sessions that we've done or that we continue to do is that it be sustainable Like, we need an insurance policy of how can this continue to be here for all of us and for people who haven't found us yet? How can we continue to be here? Like, maybe, and this is what was prompted by what Jennifer said, I should stop thinking of this as a, this is what I do every day. This is what has to take place every day before I get to do anything else. Just by it being engineered that way means I don't have the freedom that I need to pursue the things I need to pursue, right? It's like you can't leave the house. Now, what if in how we run this community, what if I had to take a break? Not like a day a week. Like, what if I had to take a month off? If there's traveling or something, like, how do you do that? How do you future-proof a community that comes together? So I'm like, oh, what if there's a break? Because as some of you know that have been listening to our podcast, I've sustained a really serious injury. And I was thinking before I could handle my own healing, I was like, I got to get on creative work hour. So it's like, how do we do this? How can we write an insurance policy for creative work, whatever that is, that ensures that when you need a big break, that you can take it? How do we write that? And in so doing, that's future-proofing. And I think we'll come back to this future-proofing topic again and again for the podcast, because future-proofing is also, there's preventative work that you do, just like with the body, to prevent injuries. Yeah. So I think we haven't really solved anything with looking at this topic. What we've done is we've stirred the pot and like, yeah, future-proofing, that's a problem to solve.
Sounds like, you know, a great project to work on as a group. And even do a blog series to accompany it, and a podcast series. And in the true spirit of building in public and taking on as a project together, that might be an interesting thing to do. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to give time to that. But I have to say, it is time to check time. Greg, what time is it?
It's that time again. You've wasted some perfectly good time listening to the Creative Work Hour podcast when you could have been doing something else, but no. Today's co-host on the team was myself, Greg, Alessandra, Bobby W., Bobby B., Jennifer Navarrete, and Shadows Pub. What about you? Let us know, how do you future-proof your creative work, or what does that look like to you? Visit us on creativeworkhour.com and come back again next week for another lively discussion.